Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. We're glad to have you with us on this snowy day. Up in Maine, government workers have reduced their car travel by 1 million vehicle miles a week since the start of the pandemic, thanks to the rapid wholesale adoption of telework policies. The preliminary data are opening an unexpected window, telecommuting's potential to deliver substantial reductions in global warming pollution. Maine Public Radio's Fred Bever brings us this report.
Last year, before anyone heard of COVID-19, Maine's legislature authorized a comprehensive analysis of telework's potential costs and benefits for state government and its employees. But as the research project got underway, the pandemic hit, and by April of this year, some 85% of the state government's workforce, excepting public safety positions, was suddenly working from home. In a research update to state lawmakers this month, Commissioner of Administration and Finance Kirsten Figueroa says the number of vehicle miles state workers drove dropped by more than 1 million miles each week. In the 30 weeks since, the state workforce saved an estimated 32 million miles worth of road time.
I would say this is seismic.
Representative Seth Berry co-chairs the legislature's Committee on Energy, Utilities, and Technology, and he was the original sponsor of the telework study legislation. As Berry notes, the pandemic forced a previously unimaginable experiment in the rapid adoption of telecommuting policies and practices. And he says it proves that telework holds big potential for reducing tailpipe emissions of carbon dioxide and other pollutants that contribute to global warming.
The state of Maine climate emissions, 54% of them come from transportation. And if a large employer like the state of Maine can shift to 85% telework, that's massive.
The state's memo estimated that CO2 emissions went down by 233,000 pounds a week as a result of the work-at-home effort. That means some 7 million pounds of CO2 emissions were averted since April. David Costello, director of clean energy programs at the Natural Resources Council of Maine, says the findings demonstrate that telework deserves more prominence in climate change policy in Maine and beyond.
Particularly in the near term, while we wait for consumers to quite frankly fall in love with the zero-emitting vehicles, electric vehicles, right? This is a great transition opportunity.
And potentially a lot cheaper than massive investments in electric vehicle or renewable energy infrastructure. And according to the state memo, preliminary data from an internal survey of state workers found that 89% of respondents said they were satisfied with telework.
Not only governments, but companies are realizing that workers do get work done. And it is something that'll be part of, I think, you know, many organizations going and businesses going forward, that they'll build in these remote work opportunities.
Permanent, large-scale adoption of teleworking likely would create some new challenges. Those range from maintaining productivity among isolated workers to addressing racial, class, and geographic inequities in access to high-speed broadband or other resources needed for the virtual workplace.
There seems to be a class problem here.
Representative Ralph Tucker, a Democrat from Brunswick, points out that while so-called knowledge workers highlighted in the state report may easily transition to a home office, the jobs of many others require physical presence.
What kind of class stratification do we have here? Are we going to let the professional class, white-collar workers, work at home, but require everybody else, you know, all the delivery people, retail people, construction people, clerical folks, are we going to require that they continue to commute?
Still, Representative Tucker, who co-chairs the legislature's Environment and Natural Resources Committee, says that while preliminary, the sheer scale of the estimated pollution reduction from telework took his breath away.
It doesn't give any final conclusions. It points out that solutions that we might have to use in order to meet our climate emissions reduction goals may shift the way we work and play a lot.
Finance Commissioner Figueroa declined comment on her memo. She says she'll wait until an outside consultant, the Sagal Group, completes its work and publishes a final report to be reviewed by stakeholders, including state workers' unions. The final product will include survey data collected about telework from other New England states, broadening even further the real-world data that the pandemic has so quickly generated.
That report from Maine Public Radio's Fred Bever. In the meantime, holy cow, how about that snow? If you looked out your window at all, you know what I'm talking about, and it's affecting cities and towns all over the Commonwealth and in Boston. A daily snowfall record today at over 12 inches the last time we got a report from the National Weather Service. Boston's not the only town that's been hit hard, so we are going to check in actually with Quincy. Joining us now is Quincy's Mayor Thomas Koch. Mayor Koch, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Good to be with you.
So is it up to your knees, your ankles, your waist, how you measuring it for yourself there?
Well, I am a short guy, so you may not want to go by me, but suffice to say it's a significant snowfall, and a little different than what the forecasters had suggested. We anticipating with that light, fluffy stuff, but we ended up with a very heavy, wet snow, which is a little tougher to move and harder on the equipment.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. I've been thinking not only about how's the snow plowing going, but of course, this is the first snowstorm we've really, really dealt with in this pandemic. And I wonder if that created staffing problems on snow removal as well.
Well, it's interesting. We get snow, but we don't get it, thank God, as much as a buffalo or somebody like that. So the first one of the year, and particularly after a year where we didn't have a whole lot last year, the first one, everyone's always a little rusty. And you might have some new guys or new women on routes that aren't familiar with the route and this different contractors. It poses some challenges. And, of course, we have a lot of rentals in our city. People move in, move out. They don't know the parking rules, so that makes it a little more challenging than some of the streets that are tough to navigate in good weather, never mind with snow. So having said all that, I'm very pleased overall with where we're at. We attacked it. We worked it hard. We had extra pieces on because you do have times when equipment breaks down and you don't want to lose the battle, if you will, because it's sometime between 1 and 4 in the morning, it was a whiteout. It was very, very difficult and challenging. And of course, then the prediction, the forecast was everything was going to freeze up dramatically. So once you, if you don't have that curb to curb and it freezes up, it's like concrete and you're stuck with it for weeks. So it's important to get that first storm done right.
So I want to ask you, the coronavirus, this pandemic, is the context in which everything in our lives is playing out. And of course, with this kind of a storm, it makes one think, okay, South Shore Health System is getting, its first doses of the vaccine this week for frontline healthcare workers. Quincy reported 36 new coronavirus cases yesterday. There's testing, there's processing, vaccine distribution. Are you concerned about coronavirus critical services, and your ability to keep up with that with this kind of snowfall?
No, I'm not. I mean, it's all relative. I mean, we're in the mix with everyone else. We had done very well for a while, but the numbers certainly increased in Quincy as well as other communities. Thank God we haven't seen a death in Quincy in some time. But we are watching the numbers. We were in the 60s for a few days last week. Yesterday, as you said, was in the 30s. Hopefully we're going back in the right direction. But with the holidays upon us, it's going to be more and more challenging. But no, we're in regular contact with our local health providers, the local hospitals, our health departments on top of things, the school nurses, everyone coordinated, working well together. It is getting concerning about the amount of hospital beds that may or may not be available in the coming days because they're getting a little bit strained again. But I think we're doing everything we possibly can to mitigate this, and we'll continue to do that.
Last thing I want to ask you is about the schools. I know Quincy Public Schools held remote classes today rather than canceling like a traditional snow day. That is the big question on lots of districts' minds. Did you get pushback for going remote versus calling a snow day?
Well, no matter what we do, we get pushback. everyone's got an opinion, and I understand that. But this early in the winter, we're mindful of the calendar. And I know people like to get a day off, but the flip side is when you get into late June and you push in the heat that time of year, it's nice to get out of the classroom and those buildings a little earlier. So this time of the year, we'd rather do the remote. We'll see how the year goes, and hopefully we don't have too many more days, but if you got 1 or 2 in February, maybe we do opt to just cancel it for the day and give the kids a break. But for now, we thought it made sense to to keep the calendar as it is.
And any particular measures you've had to take in the last 24 hours or so for really vulnerable populations, maybe those who need food assistance, those who are homeless?
Well, again, we work with, we go to Good Father Bills. We get a homeless shelter here. We've got a lot of nonprofit agencies that everybody is very well connected in the network, and we work with each of them with their needs and challenges, and so far, so good.
Excellent. Well, that is Quincy Mayor Thomas Koch. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
We got more than a foot of snow on the ground in Boston, according to the National Weather Service report, and we want to know if you are embracing this snowy day or are you hating it? How are you coping? Are you in the position for this day to be fun, or maybe it's compounding other coronavirus-oriented challenges for you? If you have kids, did they get a snow day, or did the pandemic undo that tradition? And do you think there should have been a snow day today? We're going to take all those thoughts, as well as any favorite snow day memories you have from your own childhood. 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And of course, you can tweet us at Radio Boston. So joining us for the conversation is Beth Titel, reporter for the Boston Globe, and Kiana Agbai, a Boston parent who's also the author of the blog and Instagram account Harlem Lovebirds. Beth and Kiana, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
Thank you.
So, Beth, what was your first thought when you looked out the window this morning?
You know, I was thinking about my own snow day memory, which isn't even actually a snow day that I had, but it was something that my mother got. When I was growing up, she was on our local town government. And in those days, they would read the cancellations over the radio. And I remember just this one snowstorm. We were really hoping it was going to be canceled, and it was, which meant she was going to stay home for the evening. And I had that kind of cozy, like Charlie Brown special feeling. So I guess I was thinking about that this morning, my mother's snow day.
What were you thinking, Kiana, when you looked out the window?
I was thinking about my two kids and how excited they were going to be. They're 6 and 10. So there was a lot of anticipation for them going to bed. And so it was kind of fun to think about living vicariously through them and the possibility that, they might be able to get out and play in the snow.
And I want to put the number out to callers again here too. 800-423-TALK with your childhood memory of a snow day. What were you thinking when you looked out the window this morning? Was it, I am so excited, or oh no? Bring all your thoughts. 800-423-8255. Kiana, you just talked about your kids. I know you have one going to school in person and another going remotely. So what happened for them today? Did they get a snow day, or did they both go remote, and are they still in school?
So both children were remote. The child that usually is in a hybrid program, so 1 week on campus, 1 week off, still had to log in for a full day. However, her brother, who is actually fully remote, still had to log in, but he got a half day. So at 6 years old, he completely understood like what was going on. So he was counting down to lunch, and then he walked in to my office and said, "Mommy, I'm free."
And so what does that do for you, right? You're still working, right?
Oh, yes. And my husband, he's working from home too. I mean, he stepped out to do the clearing of the snow and all of that. But it is a bit of a juggle because I still had calls and things that I needed to attend to and deadlines. So I just let the kids know, you're going to have to fend for yourself a little bit this afternoon. But, they're understanding, they're in the groove, and they were just happy to be able to be together and play out in the snow for a little bit.
So Beth, you've done some writing about this. It strikes me that sort of the snow day comparison is the equivalent of that old, well, when I was a kid, I had to walk, barefoot uphill 2 miles against a grizzly bear in both directions to get to school, and people are soft today. You've done some writing on this, right?
I was so interested in a while. It was a couple of years ago. Actually, it was 2014 when people were starting to say that the threshold for the snow day had fallen, like that people we would now call a snow day at just a few flakes when that wasn't true in the past. It was actually really hard to nail down because it's hard to get, you can't do direct storm to storm comparisons. But a couple of things were in play. One was that superintendents started calling the snow days the night before to help parents be able to plan so you could get childcare or tell your boss, hey, I'm going to do tomorrow. But what that led to was a couple of at that point, there was a spate of calls that had been made when the next day it basically rained or just, rained, it snowed under an inch. So people were really unhappy. And so I was trying to figure that out. But there was another thing that was actually also prompting the snow days to be called when there was less snow, which was that there's more cars on the road, so that it becomes more of a catastrophe or a crisis if there's gridlock because it's a lot slower. So that was something. And then also the fact that news is so national. So like we would actually hear in the old days, you didn't hear if there was a storm in Atlanta, you really weren't hearing about it. Now that's kind of big news. Oh, I hear Atlanta's got 2 feet or whatever. So I think that it is, they do call snow days earlier. This year, of course, is so interesting that the snow day is being called sort of having very little to do with the actual snow. Like my kids, when they were in grade school, loved this thing called the snow day calculator. You would punch in how much snow there was and you'd see how what percent chance you had of getting a snow day. But of course, today that the amount of snow on the ground almost has nothing to do with whether you're getting a snow day or not.
All right, let's go to the phones. 1-800-423-8255. What did you need out of today? What did you want out of today? What do you want for your kids? And is this making it easier or harder in your life? We've got Tammy on the line from Newton. Tammy, go ahead.
Hi, I just wanted to point out how snow days aren't as fun for the parents anymore either. When I was a kid, on the rare occasions when my parents would have a snow day, and of course we had a snow day after being glued to the radio like Beth talked about, we would hang out. We'd play, you know, Monopoly on the rug, on the living room rug and things like that. Now if there's a snow day, I still need to log in, get to work, get my work done, and regardless of whether my kids have a snow day or not.
And in Newton, they did not today, right, Tammy?
Well, I don't have kids in school in Newton. My younger one is a college student living at home, studying remotely to his university. But unless the power's out, I'm still at work for a full day.
Yeah, yeah, that is a very good point. And Kiana, it's not as if in a pandemic, there's lots of strategy. You can't even necessarily pool kids at a neighbor's house and take turns with childcare during the day to solve this problem. How much harder is it to manage the logistics we can't control, like a foot of snow?
It's not fun. I think the ability to head out with the kids is something that I miss. The opportunity where in the past you might get the heads up, you know, like the other caller was saying, the night before. And so you could kind of plan and strategize. You don't quite have the ability now with COVID to make it into a fun day. It's more of a, you know, can I get to the grocery store? Can I do this? And also make sure that I'm safe and I have my mask and I'm protected and knowing that there's going to be a lot of people there. So I think it just adds a layer of stress and a mental load that just wasn't there before.
1-800-423-8255 to tell us how you are coping with this first big nor'easter. If you're home alone, what does that mean for you, you know, with the logistics of life in a pandemic? Beth, I'm going to turn back to you. I heard Mayor Marty Walsh on Morning Edition this morning, and one of the things that he did was remind people to be mindful of seniors who may live in their community, older adults, or others in isolation who may need help. And, you know, one of the things that bad weather does is exacerbate our vulnerabilities. And it also calls on us to recognize that we're a community, both of which the pandemic complicates. In this kind of a storm, is there something extra we need to do to be good neighbors, to stand up for each other? And how do we do that and keep each other safe at the same time?
You know, you bring up such an important point. I think the thing probably is if you are somebody who can do it physically, to grab a shovel and just walk through your neighborhood and see if there's somebody who, if you happen to know an elderly or some person or someone who's not, you know, not comfortable shoveling, lives there. And if it doesn't look like anything's been done, you might knock on the door and, you know, then step back so the person's not alarmed and just say, can I shovel your walk? Can I do something for you? And I think also probably calling or texting people you know who are alone or elderly or frail or something, you know, that might actually be a good idea. That's really smart that you brought that up.
And do you, you know, I think we are experiencing a tension, Beth, in trying to be community for each other, while so much of what the protocols for this moment require of us in terms of being separate and being alone. And I just wonder about the mental health impacts of that and how we think about our collective psyche in this cold, dark weather while we're already so lonely.
I know, you know, I was thinking about that because I was thinking about what people liked about snow days so much. And I think it was, they were sort of magical. It was like this little gift would come to you, a day off from life. And I think that that's not happening this year. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really feel like a day off. In fact, I was thinking nobody was even panic buying in the grocery stores yesterday, because we're always panic buying. Like, you don't need to panic buy. You're constantly living like that. So I think that just speaks to the mental health challenge that you were talking about. In fact, I was talking with a superintendent yesterday who told me that the most controversial thing a superintendent could do before COVID was messing up the snow day call. And he said now, compared to COVID, and whether you're going to say kids are back in school or not back in school or hybrid, the snow day call was so much less. But there's still a lot of passion surrounding today. But you can just see, you're right, the stakes are so much higher. I think I'm always so impressed with people who kind of rise above even their own emotional feelings or their own anxiety and manage to reach out to others. I think that is the lesson, to really just call people and see, do you need help? Do you need food? What can I do?
Let's go back to the phones, 800-423-8255. We've got Linda on the line from Scituate. Linda, what's on your mind?
Well, we have a full snow day here, both for hybrid and remote students. And I think it depends on where you are, you know, what kind of snow is in the forecast. If there is a possibility of a power outage with the winds, then, you know, it's best for the districts to be proactive. You know, and there's no online learning if there is no electricity in your home. And we also have to deal with coastal flooding here. And this was, we have a new superintendent who was ahead of the game, called it early. And, you know, we're, everybody's home, and I think it's the best decision for us. And it's beautiful outside, if you can get out and enjoy it.
And how about the coastal flooding? Is everyone okay there, Linda? Do you know?
We had some areas that were cut off. There is an area called Second Cliff that has only one road that goes over the harbor area to access it, and that was completely blocked for a while. And there were some cars left in parking lots that, unfortunately, I'm sure are heavily damaged now.
Thanks for the call, Linda. Kiana, we don't know what the rest of the winter is going to hold. Last winter was relatively mild. You know, as I said at the top of the show, today was actually record-breaking, at least in Boston. So who knows what comes next? You know, what are key pieces of the survival strategy, and what do parents and schools need to be doing to make sure that we're going to get through these next couple of months, you know, intact, fairly intact?
Definitely. I think the point about access, and especially for digital learning, we've seen, at least with my remote student, that internet is hit or miss in the community. And so I think even without snow, it's something that we don't know what we're going to get day to day. So I think it's really important to have a sense of flexibility, to have empathy, you know, for the parents and for the teachers who are struggling. And sometimes I think you do have to take it upon yourself as a parent to kind of read the room, so that if I'm seeing, you know what, this is really bogging my student down, what do I need to do to make the call and let my kids have a mental health day? Forget about a snow day. Sometimes you just need a mental health day. And I think we have to realize as parents that's well within our power.
Beth, do you think this is a day you're going to remember? I mean, there are so many moments, I think, a decade from now, I'm going to remember about 2020. Is this one of them, or is this one you'll sort of literally stomp off of your shoes and move on from?
I love it. You know, I love thinking about things that way. The thing that I will remember is our dog loves snow. So I was mm-hmm. so excited on her behalf this morning, because I knew she didn't know that it had snowed, of course. And I was looking forward to that. But will I remember it? It's too early to say, because it's only 3:30. But I'm almost hoping I don't remember it, to tell you the truth, that there's nothing bad that happens.
But be happy to block it out, right? Kiana, how about you? Do you think this is one of those 2020 days you're going to remember? Or is it one of the ones that will fall by the wayside later?
I'll remember it as the big snow, but we'll see what's ahead the rest of the winter. I'm kind of not surprised by anything anymore. So I think, you know, we have a lot of winter left ahead, and we'll see what happens.
All right. That is Kiana Agbai, a Boston parent, also the author of the blog and Instagram account Harlem Lovebirds, and Beth Titel, reporter for the Boston Globe. Great to have you both today. Stay warm and dry.
You too.
Thank you.
So I have this plate in front of me that has a world peace cookie, a classic jammer, and a pecan puff. And they are here not only because I'm going to eat them, but because we want to talk with you about cookies. Your favorite holiday cookies, your favorite recipes. The number is 800-423-8255. We figure Maybe you're stuck inside and you're baking, or maybe you're dreaming about something warm and tasty to eat while you shovel. And it's that time of year. The holidays are a wonderful cookie time. So we're saying, call us with recipes, favorite memories, favorite traditions, or even, because we have an expert, your tough cookie question, something you can't quite get right. 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Here with us to share the cookie experience is James Beard Award-winning cookbook author Dori Greenspan. She's been called a culinary guru by the New York Times, and she literally wrote the book on cookies. It's called, appropriately, Dori's Cookies. Dori Greenspan, welcome back to Radio Boston.
So happy to be with you. And today feels like the perfect day to be talking about cookies.
It is a good cookie day, isn't it?
Right. Warm and cozy as opposed to freezing and icy.
Yes. And because we wanted to have lots of cookies to try and eat, and because he is a cookie baker extraordinaire and cookie super fan, also joining us is Radio Boston producer Chris Siderick. Hey there, Chris. Oops, doesn't sound like we have Chris, but I know he's excited to be a part. There you are. Chris, are you there?
I am. Yeah, I was just enjoying one of your pecan puffs. I cheated a little bit. I tried them early. I couldn't help it.
You take a little extra taste. That's right. All right. So we baked cookies out of Dori's cookbook. We baked some cookies from our own family holiday traditions. We've got lots to talk about. So Dori, you just talked about what a great day this is for cookies. And of course, this is the season for cookies. Why? I mean, it could be a pie season. It could be a cake season. But for some reason, it's a cookie season. So what is that about? Why?
This holiday, of course you could bake a pie, but we just did that for Thanksgiving. Now it's cookies' turn. But I think particularly for the holidays coming up, cookies are so much fun. I mean, this holiday is different from all others we've ever had, but it's nice to have a variety, and it's so easy to have a variety with cookies. And even if we're not having cookie swaps and sharing our cookies, face to face, cookies are a great present. They pack well, they ship, you can drop them at your neighbor's doorstep. And cookies, there's kind of a cookie for everyone. You can make the entire world happy with cookies.
And I will say cookies makes me feel as happy as the entire world. So that makes good sense. I'm going to go straight to the phones, 800-423-8255, because Jessica in Cambridge actually has a cookie memory she wants to share. Jessica, go ahead.
Oh, good.
So this time of year really reminds me of my grandmother's chocolate crinkle recipe. It's something that she always baked around Christmas. And now that she's been gone for a few years, it's now my tradition to make the crinkles for my family. So this time of year definitely reminds me of her fudgy, delicious chocolate crinkles.
Those sound wonderful, Jessica.
Yeah, it's so lovely. And Jessica, what you just said makes me think about another reason why we all love cookies so much, but sweets in general. You know, sweets are something we make because we make them for love, because we don't really need them the way we need dinner. And they're such a nice way to keep family memories alive and to pass on traditions and to pass on what made us happy as children, to be able to pass that on to our other family members and to share that with friends. It's a lovely thing to do. And crinkles are so good.
Well, you know, Jessica just talked about fudgy, chocolatey cookies. And Chris and I, or actually it was my best friend's daughter, she helped me with baking, and she baked the World Peace cookies. Chris, you baked them. And Dori, I think you had some World Peace cookie dough already at home, right?
That's right. And I now have a World Peace cookie in my hand. So
excellent.
We've all got them.
There's no better place to be than wherever you are with a World Peace cookie in your hand.
That's right. So, Dori, here's what we're going to do. Chris and I are going to taste our World Peace cookies while you tell our listeners a little bit about the cookie and the recipe. And then you're going to eat, and Chris and I are going to talk about the cookie baking experience. So, Dori, tell us about the World Peace cookie.
So the World Peace cookie, the recipe was given to me over 20 years ago by my friend, the Paris pastry chef, Pierre Herme. And when he made this cookie, he had in mind the American chocolate chip cookie and the French sablé. Sablé means sandy in French, and so the French shortbread. And the cookie, you know because you just made it, mm-hmm. is very simple to make. It's just flour and brown sugar, some white sugar, chunks of chocolate, butter, of course, butter, no eggs, chunks of chocolate, and some salt. And when Pierre gave me this recipe, the amount of salt in it and the fact that you could taste the salt as, you know, you'd finish the cookie and the flavor of the salt would linger and it would kind of urge you on to take the next bite or the next cookie. That was very unusual. Now we take it for granted that, you know, we sprinkle a little salt on top of a cookie or we add more than a pinch. But this was really new. And the cookie is made, you mix it as you would any cookie, you know, most cookies, chocolate chip cookies even, and then you make the dough into logs, and you either chill or freeze the log. And so this cookie, which I think is extraordinary, I hope you feel that way about it, mm-hmm. is really a slice mm-hmm. and bake cookie. And so oh, I love the sound of people laughing while they're eating cookies. So the cookie has this interesting texture. It's both chewy and sandy. It's very, did I mention that it's made with cocoa? I might not have. It's got that deep, real chocolate flavor because of the cocoa, which is just chocolate. And then every once in a while, you get the bits of chocolate. So, and the salt. And so every bite is like a different proportion of cookie to chocolate chunk or chocolate chips. And so I find that as simple as the cookie is, it's always interesting. You're always ready for the next bite.
Such a celebration of chocolate, I think.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And you take your next bite now, and Chris, we're going to let Dory enjoy the flavor. And I would got to tell you, I would fight my way across the room for one of these cookies. They're so good. Chris, you made them. So talk about, you know, Dory called it simple.
Yeah, I know.
Times
I was smiling
there.
At that word simple because I have to say, Dory, the way you write your recipes is wonderful for a person like me because I feel like every few lines you put in some reassurance in there. And this is definitely one of those recipes where you're like, don't worry if the dough looks like this or that. It's going to be delicious. Just keep going. And I really did find myself, the dough wasn't quite coming together. You have to form it into the logs. It was a little bit of work to get it to do that. And I, as I'm slicing them up, I'm thinking, well, some of these aren't the prettiest, but man, are they tasty. And as you said, Dory, it's that those chunks of bittersweet chocolate, just celebration of chocolate
very
is all
good.
I can say.
Let me just put
the number out to our listeners. No, Dory, it's fine. Okay. Let me just put the number out to our listeners again, 1-800-423-8255. It was great to hear about Jessica's grandmother's chocolate crinkles. I'm going to tell you in a little bit about my mother's pecan puffs. We'd love to hear about your family cookie. So give us a call and join this conversation. Dory, back to you.
Well, so I was going to say the dough is it's never quite the same one time to the next, but it's always a delicious cookie. And so you just have to roll with it, really, and just keep mixing it until it comes together. But there's something that I do in this cookie that I do in all my chocolate chip cookies, and it's something that you can, you don't, even if you're not making a world peace cookie, although I hope you will, you can use this. Instead of using chocolate chips, I use my favorite bar chocolate in cookies. So I chop the chocolate, and it means I'm getting my favorite chocolate, I'm getting a good quality chocolate, and I'm getting lots of uneven pieces. And so, Chris, when you said that intermittent, you know, bite in, you know, the chocolate is there here and there and not regularly, that's really a treat. And you can do that with any cookie that calls for chocolate chips.
You know, what's really interesting with these ones, Dory, and I should say both of these recipes are going to be up on our website if folks want to try this at home. But you mentioned in the recipe, that's right. You mentioned the recipe that the dough is very different if you try it fresh out of the oven when it's still warm or if you let it cool to room temperature. And being a thorough researcher, I made sure to try it both ways. And it is so really interesting, the difference in texture.
And tomorrow, if you made these today or if you made them yesterday, and over the course of a couple of days, that they get a little drier, but still delicious, just a little different.
So that's interesting. And Dori, because I noticed with the classic jammer that actually I felt they got moisture over a few days because of the way the jelly soaked, the jam soaked into the cookie. And I want to talk about that recipe in a second. But because Chris just mentioned that these recipes are on our website and you talked about, you know, a good quality chocolate bar, for example, one of the things that was on my mind with both of these recipes, Dori, is they require special ingredients, sometimes special equipment, maybe a 2-inch cookie cutter, lots and lots of butter. One recipe calls for a fine salt or sanding sugar. That's expensive and it's complicated. And we will have people who want to enjoy cookies this year, but who are facing some real hardship.
Absolutely.
They may have limited space, ingredients. So are there ways to make them more affordable, easier to make, requiring fewer equipment, pieces of equipment? How do you address that?
Well, most everything that's made in a mixer can be made by hand and was for hundreds of years. So we start there. it's nice to have a stand mixer, but you don't need one. The salt, you can use regular table salt. It's always with cooking and with baking, you try and buy the best ingredients that you can afford. But in both cooking and baking, there's so much room for playing around, decorating a cookie doesn't have to be an expensive sprinkle or sanding sugar. It can be regular granulated sugar or a little bit of, if you have raw sugar. Or, see, people always say to me, you never decorate. The fact is that I would leave off most decorations on cookies, even at holiday time. I know this is probably heresy, but I find plain cookies beautiful. I find just the ingredients as they bake together make something lovely. So it doesn't have to be fancy and it doesn't have to be decorated. And my mother didn't bake at all. Forget that. I have no recipes from my mother. But my grandmother was a baker and she had a wooden spoon, a big bowl, and when she had to cut something out, she used a drinking glass. So, and she didn't have a rolling pin. She used a bottle. it's all possible and it's fun. There's nothing, what could be more fun than solving the problem of I don't have, or I can't, I can't find whatever, whatever it is, and finding a solution for it. And then what you bake is even more special.
So we'd love to hear your cookie hacks, listeners, as well, especially ingredients you found or a substitution you made out of necessity, or maybe a tool like that drinking glass that you're using instead of a cookie cutter. Those hacks are great, and they're great tips to share with everyone else. 800-423-8255. So, Chris, you and I made Dori's classic jammer. Dori,
favorite, too.
Yeah. So I'm going to let Chris talk a little bit about the classic jammer while I take a bite, the baking process, and then your inspiration on this one is fascinating, Dori, so we'll talk about that in just a second. Chris, what was your baking experience like with the jammer?
This one was a little terrifying for me because you had two different...
Did you use the word terrifying?
I jokingly use the word terrifying. I mean, it's all fun.
I was scared too.
Multiple elements. You're making a streusel dough and you're making a shortbread dough and kind of combining these things. And there were things I hadn't really done a ton of before. But again, your recipes kind of walk you right through the process and the way this thing comes together. I thought going into this, we knew we were going to make the world peace and the classic jammers. And I thought no doubt the world peace cookies were going to be my favorite, but the shortbread and the sweetness of the streusel and the I use blackberry jam personally, so there's a nice kind of tart bite to it. Yeah, oh, just unbelievably delicious. And I think you can kind of defend eating them for breakfast because it's almost like toast and jelly situation. So it's a win on all levels. I love this cookie. We're going to make this every year for the holidays from here on out.
Oh, so, this makes me so happy. So I was on your website and I saw the cookies and they're beautiful. Weren't you proud of yourself that you made those?
Oh, I have sent that picture to so many people.
Proud. But so mine. So here's the thing. I worked just as hard as Chris, Dory, but I didn't send the picture around because I felt like I let him cook a little too long. They're still delicious, but they weren't as beautiful as I wanted because my raspberry jam splurged out a little bit, and I felt like they were a little dark.
Oh, okay. So I'm just going to explain the cookie, and then I want to come back to your dark cookie. So the cookie is a shortbread. You make the dough, roll it out, and cut it. Although, if you're not making jammers, this could also be a slice and bake. They won't be as beautifully round, but they'll still be good. So you roll it out, and then I came up with this new, so the cookie came about, I had a dream. I was in Paris, I dreamed about this cookie. I created it in my head in the middle of the night, woke up the following morning, made it and loved it. Mm-hmm. So it's this vanilla shortbread cookie and you bake it in a muffin pan. And the muffin pan keeps its shape, keeps the cookie shape beautifully so that you don't have anything to do but to pop it into the pan. And the pan makes each one exactly the same size. So they look so professional. Then there's a dollop of jam in the center, and then there's streusel around it. So what you see is the circle of jam in the center and this bumpy, crunchy dough around the edges. And you get lots of different textures. So you get the crunch of the streusel, and you get the softness of the jam and that crumbly shortbread texture. And as you said, it does get a little softer because of the jam as time goes on. But so I am someone who really likes a well-baked cookie or a well-baked tart shell. I think that if you don't get enough color on what you're baking, you're not getting all the flavor that the ingredients
can give. There you go.
So I have a feeling I would love your cookie.
Oh, that makes me feel so much better.
I just wanted to say what you were talking about decorating earlier. I had a friend who came over and helped shovel me out today. And we gave him a plate of cookies as a thank you. And he popped open the tin and saw the classic jammers. And just like you said, no decoration, the cookie itself. He's like, well, nailed it on the presentation. So we're already a win. And it really is just a beautiful, beautiful cookie.
And also,
so I want to get.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Dory. No,
I was just thinking that it's part of, if you're not doing a lot of decorating, you can get an interesting assortment of cookies just by using different shapes so that you might cut some cookies in triangles or in squares and some are round. Some could be a chocolate cookie, a vanilla cookie, so you have different colors. So yes, you nailed it on presentation and you didn't have to do anything extra to get that.
I want to get one more call in. We've got Esther on the line from Sudbury. Esther, do you have a short story for us?
Yes. When I was a child, I was baking something, and the instructions didn't say to cream the sugar and the butter before adding the eggs, so I tried to mix that all up, and it curdled. And I had to wake my dad up in the afternoon. He was a baker. He went to work at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I know if I threw something out, he would be upset. And he said, why didn't you cream the butter and the sugar first? And I said, it didn't say so in the book. And the way he fixed it was making another batch of cookies and creaming the butter and the sugar and then adding my curdled mixture into that and doubling the recipe. And I know people have made that mistake, and it was a real helpful thing for me to be able to tell them to repair
it. Plus, you have bonus cookies.
That's right. That's a great cookie hack. Esther, thank you so much.
Oh,
so, Dory,
terrific.
We are all.
Thank you.
We are almost out of time, Dory. So, but I do want to ask you: is there one other recipe from the book that just is a cookie that gives you great joy this time of year?
Well, It's a very simple cookie. It's called the Melody Cookie, and it's a chocolate cookie. Again, it's a rollout cookie. And it's a cookie from my childhood that it was a boxed cookie. I don't know if it hasn't been made for a trillion years, but it's a crummy cookie that you just put sugar on top of. And that cookie just brings my entire childhood back to me. And
all right, that is Dori Greenspan, the James Beard Award-winning cookbook author of Dori's Cookies and Chris Siderick, Radio Boston producer. Dori, what a treat to have you. Chris, thanks for baking alongside.
What a blast.
So nice to be with you. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. Black Nativity is celebrating 50 years in Boston this weekend. Written by Langston Hughes, it's a gospel song play that reimagines the story of the Nativity by placing it in an early 20th century black neighborhood.
So he's talking about the inn, like a hotel, and he has characters who are talking behind the back of the management about how cruel they were to turn away a woman who was about to have her child.
The Boston Show is the longest-running production of Black Nativity in the United States, and Edmund Barry Gaither says this year they were planning a season-long celebration. Gaither's been involved in every production since 1970 and is now in charge as the director of the National Center for Afro-American Artists.
We would be hugging and congratulating each other. In the context of the virus, most of that has just disappeared, and we have had to think about how to reinvent ourselves based on what's possible.
Gaither says the celebration will instead be a virtual gala Saturday night, celebrating joy, love, and hope. It will pay tribute to the production's legacy and chart the next 50 years.
We have, over a long history, faced a lot of difficulties, and we are still here. So we are, by our presence, evidence of survival. So let us draw on the strength that has seen us through previous stresses to give us the hope and courage to get through this one. And let Black Nativity be part of what sustains us.